Good afternoon. This is Sarah Blanc, and it's July 7th, 2011. And I'm here with Charles Hines.
Hines,
thank you. And Mr. Hines, would you care to start just by telling me some details about where you were born and your early life growing up?
Okay. My dad is from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And things were tough in the early 20s after he got out of the Army, and so he re-enlisted and was sent to Panama with the Coast Artillery. And
what was his name? Your father's name?
Charles.
Okay. Sorry, continue.
Yes. And he met my future mother here in Panama at some kind of a social function, dance, and they were married, and I was born in the Republic of Panama. My mother is from the Netherlands West Indies. She's Dutch citizen, but not Holland Dutch, Antilles Dutch. But you can't tell that by looking at her because she's big boned and blue eyed and blonde. And so that's it as far as my parents go. I was born in the Republic of Panama, not in a canal zone, but in the Republic of Panama. And a reason for that is there was a group of American doctors who started this hotel in Panama called Hospital Panama. And it was very popular with the Americans living in the canal zone. And a great number of them attended these doctors' clinics. Dr. Herrick, Dr. James, Dr. Reeder, Dr. Runyon, all Americans and excellent physicians and surgeons too. And we were living in the canal zone, and that's where I went to school and grew up.
What was going to school like there?
Going to school was fun. Elementary school and kindergarten and junior high and high school. It was, the curriculum was very, very good, and we got a good education.
Mm. Would you compare it to, was it a lot like a U.S. education,
yeah,
or was it very different?
Oh, no. I imagine it was a lot like the U.S. because it was based on U.S. standards.
Mm-hmm. And did it run sort of like a public school, or was it still?
It was only for members of the families who were working in the canal zone.
Mm-hmm.
But it was open to Panamanians also, provided they paid tuition.
Mm-hmm. So was it a small group of people that you were with through all those years, or did it constantly change? And
no, it was pretty static, you know. We all went to elementary school together and then high school. And of course, there was some scattering in those times, but for the most part, yeah, we stayed together as a group.
And then when you came to the end of high school, what did you decide to do?
I went into an apprenticeship. Canal had an apprentice program, 4 years, and I became a sheet metal worker.
Okay.
And I worked in craft for a few years, and then I had an opportunity to transfer to heavy construction and heavy equipment operations, which I did. And I got a lot of on-the-job training in that, and that's where I stayed for my whole career.
Okay. So this was a private company that you were working with?
No, it was a Panama Canal Company.
Okay. So how does that differ from working for a private company?
Well, it was all U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
And we were well taken care of. Some people say that we are pampered, and maybe we were, but it was a unique situation being in the canal zone, the Panama Canal, and just this one strip of land was a canal zone, and the rest was Republic of Panama.
Mm-hmm. So you were still under those circumstances where the government owned your home and all of the different facilities around you?
Yes, that was all U.S. government.
Mm-hmm.
Except for concessions like barber shops, beauty shops, shoe repair shops, and things like this were let out on a concession basis.
Mm-hmm. So can you tell me about some of the types of projects you were involved with through your work?
Oh, well, what type of projects? when I was working as a sheet metal worker, we did a lot of stainless steel work for the hospitals and for the restaurants. And it was known as a jobbing shop. You know, we didn't do any particular type of work. We've had a wide variety of things to do. And we were exposed to other crafts like plumbing and welding and things like that. And we picked up a very well-rounded education in our particular craft. Mm-hmm. We did roofing work. I did a lot of work in roofing work. And that's about it. And in the heavy equipment side of it, we did a lot of heavy construction and maintenance and repairs. Even railroad systems, but not the main Transistmian line, just the railroad network that went into some of these other divisions that were part of the Panama Canal table of organization.
So you say you were pretty pampered as workers, but were there still ever any issues among people you worked with where they wanted their working conditions to change for one reason or another?
No, they were very happy
very with satisfying.
Their working conditions, sure.
Was it ever dangerous work?
Hazardous?
Mm-hmm.
In a way, you know, crafts are,
mm-hmm.
yes, not to a great extent. They had a good safety program, but accidents did happen occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I wouldn't say it was dangerous work.
Did your coworkers change at all as people started to come in and out of the canal zone later on?
Well, they had people retire and they had hired people from the states that would come in. Yes, there was changes, but they all fit in well.
Mm-hmm.
They all fit in well. And we had a lot of Panamanians in the Panama Canal Company, you know, and for the most part they were helpers and laborers and things like this. But as time went on and Panama became more involved in the operation of the canal, all of these positions were opened up to Panamanians, and they fill these slots. So the way it stands now is they don't hire any Americans. It's just Panamanian hires now.
Mm-hmm.
They've done well. A lot of people expected the canal to collapse when Panama took it over,
mm-hmm.
but that didn't happen. Not at all. They're doing a good job.
So what were some of the powerful political events that happened while you were working?
Well, the most powerful was the riots of 1964, when what sparked it all off was even going back to 1959, the Panamanians said, "Hey, give us a break. Let's be partners in this." You know, the United States controlled everything in the canal zone at that time. And they said, "Yeah, let us participate in the running of the canal. You know, let us have some of the profits and make it a 50-50 deal as far as profits go." But the United States wouldn't buy that. And that was the beginning of it, the beginning of the unhappiness on the part of the Panamanians. They felt that it was their right to have a say-so in the operation of the canal, because it was, you know, it was their territory. But the United States was very inflexible on this. And that's what triggered the 64 riots. And the Panamanians wanted to fly the flag over the canal zone. And that was really the turning point. And they had a solid argument as far as I'm concerned, because mm-hmm. the United States bases overseas in Turkey and all these foreign countries in Germany, the flag of the host country always flew next to the American flag on the bases. And this would have been so simple to carry out. You know, say, "Hey, sure, you can fly the flag next to our flag," you know. But they wouldn't, and that is really what sparked it off.
Mm-hmm. Where did you get to witness these riots? Or
yes, I was right there.
So, do you have any vivid memories, or was it mostly just chaotic?
Well, they called in the U.S. troops and we were never in any physical danger because we stayed away from them. But, you know, people were killed and some of our GIs were killed, and all unnecessary in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
All they would have had to do was agree to fly the flag next, you know.
Mm-hmm. So as someone who was living there at the time and kind of seeing where everybody was coming from, did you have a hard time discussing it with people in the States that didn't really understand what the issue was? Or no. Did you not really get into it that much with people?
No, I really didn't get into it much.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did your family have any sort of strong feelings about it?
Yeah, well, we were all very unhappy about it. My wife is a Panamanian, and that's the first question that people ask me, you know, hey, how does your wife feel about it, you know? But it was a sad situation. Nobody could feel happy about it. Mm-hmm. No, nobody. And it was just a sad event. Doesn't bring back good memories.
Yeah. So your kids grew up in Panama as well?
Yeah, they grew up in the canal zone.
Okay, so did they? Would you say they had a similar upbringing to you, the same type of school experience and all that?
Right.
And what do they think about their lives growing up there? Because they live here now, right?
Yeah, here. They're here right now, yeah. They loved it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Kids were very happy.
Good. And they were born in the hospital there?
Yes, they were born on the Atlantic side. Because we were living on the Atlantic side at the time.
And what are their names and what years were they born?
Well, Carl, he was born in 61, and Heidi was born in 64.
Okay. So you had young kids when all of that political chaos was going on.
Oh, yeah.
It was probably very frustrating.
Yeah.
And then do you remember any other moments politically that came after that, whether aftermath or much later?
Well, there were a lot of changes after that. The treaty went through as a result of that. The treaty eventually went through in 77. And they incorporated Panamanian policemen into the Canal Zone police. And eventually they turned over the courts. And the hospital eventually went to Panama. The military took over the hospital first, and then everything eventually went to Panama.
Mm-hmm. Over a couple decades, or?
Yeah, 79, 77, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Was there any sort of backlash from the Americans when that happened, or was it mostly accepted?
No, a lot of Americans were very unhappy about the treaty, about giving up the canal. Mm-hmm. President Reagan himself said, hey, the canal is ours. We bought it. We paid for it. It's ours. But that's not true. It wasn't ours. We were there like on a lease basis. A lot of Americans still harbor bitterness over that, over giving up the canal. Some of them won't come back to Panama because of that.
Mm-hmm.
But it had to come. There had to be a treaty. Maybe not the treaty we got, but there should have been a treaty. There needed a treaty.
Mm-hmm. So, sorry, I'm blanking. I just had a follow-up question for you about the treaty. I'm sorry. let's see. I hate when I do this. So did this affect your job in any way, the treaty? No.
No. when the canal was turned over to Panama, I was carried on in my position by the Panama government. And that's how I came to work an extra 11 years at the canal, past my mandatory retirement, which would have been my mandatory retirement date under the U.S. system.
Mm-hmm.
But I retired from the U.S. Government and then was immediately picked up by the Panamanian government in the same position, same rate of pay. So it was a good deal for me.
Nice. That works. Wasn't the original policy that once you retire in the Panama Canal Zone, you can't really live there?
No, you have to give up your quarters because the quarters are all U.S. government quarters.
Mm-hmm. So did most people have a similar arrangement that you did where once they retire in the U.S., then they are able to get employment in Panama?
Some of them stayed with the Canales. Some of them. A lot of them left. Mm-hmm. A lot of them, some of them took early retirement when they saw what was coming. You know?
Mm-hmm. So how many years did you work for the company again?
55.
And what
five? And then I had 2 years military on top of that.
Beforehand?
Mm-hmm.
So what was your job in the military?
Oh, I was drafted during the Korean War. I was just a private, you know.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to, so you had to go to Korea?
No. When the war in Korea ended, when we were in basic training.
Oh, okay. That's lucky.
Yeah.
So where was your training for Korea?
In Fort Dix, New Jersey.
Okay.
Fort Dix, yeah. Fort Dix.
So that was just a brief period of time where you were uprooted from that area?
That's right. And we received additional training down in Fort Lee, Virginia. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I got out of the service, I went back to work for the canal.
Mm-hmm. And how long did your parents live in Panama for?
My dad retired in 1955. He worked for the canal 30 years. 31 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And did he move when he retired?
Yes.
In Panama?
No, he went to the States.
To the States? Okay. So what finally inspired you to retire?
I had just had enough, you know. Mm-hmm. I felt I had worked long enough, and what really, I would have stayed a little longer, but my wife had a knee replacement, and I had to be with her to take care of her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I retired.
What did your wife do in Panama?
She was very active in philanthropic work.
Mm-hmm.
She was very involved in an old folks home downtown in Panama. And she was very involved in garden clubs and flower club arranging and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
She's an accredited judge from the National Garden headquarters in the States. And she's still very active in that, both the old folks' home and
very cool. And same home.
Yeah, same home.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah. How many years has she been helping out there?
Well, she started when I came back to the Pacific side in 1984. That's when she started with that particular home. But when we were on the Atlantic side, she was involved in philanthropic work also.
Okay. So tell me about your life now in Panama.
Oh, my life is easy. I'm retired, and we have a little beach house up the coast a ways, and we spend about every other weekend up there.
Mm-hmm.
And I stay busy. You know, I'm not working or anything, just staying busy around the house.
Mm-hmm. Do you have family visit?
Yeah, the kids, our son comes down at Christmas, and our daughter comes down when she can.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in San Antonio, and she works for the U.S. Marshal there. And our son lives right here in Orlando, and he works for a publishing company.
So what do you think is important for people to know about your experiences in the Panama Canal Zone?
Nothing. My personal experiences? No, there's nothing for them to know, not much. Like I told Joe Wood, I had a very unspectacular career here, a long time, but, you know, nothing earth-shattering, you know.
Important. it's very important, especially if you did it for so long.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they gave me a good send-off. And I must say that the Panamanian management treated me first class. They,
mm-hmm.
they treated me royally. And, of course, I got along well with them. I speak fluent Spanish, and I fit right in with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you could pretty much identify as Panamanian, having lived there for so long.
Well, I am. I carry a dual citizenship.
Yeah.
I have Panamanian citizenship also. And that was because... the dictator we had, General Torrijos, he said, hey,
anybody born in the canal zone is automatically a Panamanian, because the canal zone is really belongs to Panama, even though the United States runs it. So when the kids came home for their summer vacations, those kids that were attending college in the States, customs gave them a bad time, immigration. And they said, hey, where's your Panamanian, where are your Panamanian documents? And we don't have any Panamanian, then you can't come in. You know, and that's when it was decided to, and the United States approved it, they had no choice, that anybody born in Panama was considered a Panamanian citizen.
Mm-hmm. And Panama does have a history of dictators. Did that make you sort of uneasy, just historically?
Not at all. I wish we had him back.
Yeah. Did you still catch wind of a lot of American propaganda against them while you were in the zone?
Against the Americans?
Against the dictators, against... I'm blanking on the one gentleman's name. It's not the one you mentioned.
Oh, Noriega?
Yeah.
Well, Noriega was involved in a lot of illegal things. He had a good deal going. He shot himself in the foot. You know, he deserved to be taken down. Mm-hmm. But no, life under Torrijos was not bad at all. Either was life under Noriega. You know, mm-hmm. You just minded your own business and nobody bothered you. Mm-hmm. I knew officers in the Panama National Guard and I got along well with them. And to answer your question, no, there's mm-hmm. no problem under Torrijos or Noriega. Maybe the politicians had problems, but not the run-of-the-mill person.
So most of the people that you knew living in the Panama Canal Zone, did they work with you or did they have other jobs?
Well, I knew a lot of employees in the Panama Canal Company, sure, mm-hmm. because through my work, you know, people in other divisions and, a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you have any stories or memories that you'd like to share from your life there that we should have on record?
Well, I can't think of any. No, I really can't think of anything exceptional. That would merit, you know.
You're far too humble for an oral history interview.
No.
So you got to vote in Panama? Did you get to vote in any of the elections there?
Well, I never voted because I was a little leery of that, because there's a law or regulation that a U.S. citizen cannot vote in presidential elections of a foreign country. So I just stayed away from the voting.
Mm-hmm. But you would have been able to, not as a U.S. citizen, but as a Panamanian citizen.
Right, exactly.
There would be no problem.
Yeah.
Huh. I wasn't aware of that U.S. law about voting in another country's election.
Unless it's changed, that's the way it was.
Yeah. Wow. All right. They're going to kill me if this interview is really short. So if there's anything else that... you'd like to share, by all means.
Well, when I leave here, I'll probably say, hey, I could have told her that.
Exactly.
I can't think of anything.
You can take your time. You know, these things are full of pauses. That's what's great about it.
Yeah, really. No, it's a very interesting. We had a lot of interesting projects, you know, the locks overhauls
you can tell me more about them.
Well, that's when they drain the chambers of the locks mm-hmm. on one side. There's two lanes. Mm-hmm. And to do maintenance work on the valves and the culverts and things like that. And that's, people come down from the States to see that. You know, it's really spectacular to see the empty chambers. The Panama Canal is quite a unique undertaking in the digging of the canal and the design, especially because it was designed way back there at the turn of the century and still mm-hmm. operating.
Yeah, that's phenomenal.
Yeah. I consider myself very fortunate to have worked at the Panama Canal mm-hmm. and spend my life here. I'm very happy that I was able to do that.
Yeah. It sounds like a wonderful life there.
Yeah, it was a good life.
The beaches are nice and they're good outdoor life. And you know, we had the climate and no natural disasters like hurricanes or tornadoes or typhoons or anything like that. You know? A lot of people, unfortunately, don't appreciate what they have here. That's what I see it.
Sure you're not going to think of anything else?
I'm trying. It's a very, very laid-back type of life, you know? I'm sorry.
No, it's fine. I'd like to know more about just everyday life, especially, you know, there's things that are going to be way different there from here, but I, you know, is it because life in Panama is completely different, or was it just a matter of the times going on? Like, you know, a grocery store trip in Panama is obviously a completely different experience than the United States.
Well, back then it was, I guess, but now Panama has grocery stores that compare with grocery stores in the States. You know, they've come a long way. But getting back to being pampered, you know, we had, back in the old days, you didn't pay rent or electricity, and it was all free because you were working for the government and you were in government housing. But they changed that, and then we started paying for electricity. We had a limit we could get free electricity from, and then above that limit you had to pay for. So everybody tried their best to keep below the maximum allowed energy. We would get, every 2 years, we'd get a free trip to the States. They implemented that because they wanted the people that came down from the States to be able to go back to the States and visit their families and not get into a rut down here, you know.
That is very nice. That's very considerate of them.
Yes, we had that free trip. Hospital care was very good. We had a good medical system. But there are a lot of little perks like that.
So when the U.S. controlled your rent and all of those things, was it similar when you had to get food? Did you use actual currency to purchase your food?
Yes, we had.
Okay. But the grocery store was run by the United States?
I beg your pardon?
Not the grocery, the grocer, the... Where you got your food from?
What about it?
Was that owned by the United States, or was
the
that
grocer? Oh yeah, they were all Americans. Mm-hmm. I'm going way back now, but then, like I say, gradually the Panamanians started to become absorbed into the company. So the only Americans you'll see down here now is they still have some pilots. You know, the pilots that take the ships through the canal. They still have a few Americans on the pilot force. Other than that, maybe a few engineers, but the American presence is just a fraction of what it used to be. It used to be totally American, but now. Not now.
So what are the feelings now when you talk to people, especially Panamanians, that were around when all the riots were going on?
Well, they consider that water over the dam, you know, that's past, unpleasant past. They don't bring it up. You don't hear any bitter discussions about that anymore.
What about schools and education? Is it something that they teach about, and is there a really strong emphasis on
in Panama? I don't know what they teach in regard to that. They no doubt favor Panama's view of what led to the riots and everything, and that's only natural. I hold to those views too.
Right. All right.
Yeah.
Should I wrap this up? Should I wrap this up?
Sure.
All right. Okay. Once again, this was Sarah Blanc, and it's July 7th, 2011, and I'm here with Charles Hintz.